The Knowledgeable Provider podcast is intended primarily to entertain, also to inform, but it is not a substitute for actual medical training and should not be used by anyone to diagnose or treat any medical condition in themselves or others. If you need medical advice, please make an appointment to see your own knowledgeable medical provider. The opinions expressed by me and anyone else who happens to appear on the podcast are solely those of the people expressing them and are not necessarily representative of any other entities. Other than the lunches at the office, I do not receive any sort of compensation from pharmaceutical or medical device companies, and I have no other relevant financial disclosures. Look, this is all for fun, okay? Don't sue me. All right, on with the show. Hello, welcome back to Knowledgeable Provider. Today, I'm very excited to share this conversation with a young man named Joshua Palmer, who is living with type 1 diabetes. You know, I'm always struck by how much you can learn from patients about whatever condition they have. I enjoy learning things from medical textbooks and from listening to experts as much as anyone else, but there are just so many things that you would never know about a particular condition unless you talk to somebody who actually has it and deals with it. You know, patients all the time will put forth some piece of information and they'll follow it immediately with, but you're the expert, or I'm not a doctor, or whatever. And I always say, look, you're the expert on your body. You're the expert on this condition that you have that nobody else can really know like you do. And in our conversation, Joshua brought up a lot of things that I never would have thought about someone having to deal with type 1 diabetes. I should disclose that Joshua is my nephew. However, he is not my patient, and I don't know anything about his medical history other than what he has chosen to share with me. So please enjoy our conversation. I think you're going to love it. Joshua Palmer, welcome to Knowledgeable Provider. Thanks so much for your time, man. It's good to see you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been looking forward to it.
Me as well.
You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Joshua Palmer. I'm 20 years old. I am a student at Colorado State University. I love playing sports, and photography is a very big hobby of mine.
What kind of stuff do you like to photograph?
I really enjoy photographing nature. I enjoy going out on hikes or walks around my house. We have a little nature reserve kind of close to my mom's house that I really enjoy taking photographs of. And I've got some really good ones that I'm pretty proud of.
Awesome. So we're here to talk about diabetes. I'll talk about how you were diagnosed and how that came about for you.
So I was diagnosed in October of 2020. I was 17 years old at the time, which is on the older side for a diagnosis with type 1 diabetes. It was a very interesting journey. I kind of knew that I might have diabetes 6 months before I actually got diagnosed. I'd just seen some videos online of people talking about diabetes, and I was like, hey, that kind of fits with what I'm experiencing. With it being during COVID, it was a very unique experience, I think. Time in the hospital was kind of crazy with everyone having to be masked up and all of that. It was definitely quite overwhelming.
Yeah, I can imagine. So that was 3 years ago, right?
Correct.
What were the symptoms that you were feeling that made you think you might have that before you were diagnosed?
So one of the biggest ones was just an extreme thirst. I would be rotating bottles in and out of the fridge like every 20 minutes, having a constant supply of water. I was just constantly draining. It was nonstop. With it being remote learning, actually, I would spend actually most of my time not at my computer because I was drinking so much water and having to go to the bathroom so often. It was pretty intense. I also had extreme weight loss. I lost about 80 pounds over that summer before I was diagnosed without really doing anything. Got down to a pretty low weight for my height, which was what ended up being the kind of line that made us go into the hospital. I was extremely tired all the time. I was having a really hard time staying awake during my classes. I would fall asleep early during the day. It was a lot to manage.
You're still in high school at that point, yeah?
Correct. That was my senior year.
Was there diabetes in the family? Like, is this something you ever saw coming, or that anybody thought might have been a thing for you?
It was not. No one in my family that I know has type 1 or 2 diabetes. So it kind of came as a very big surprise for us.
Yeah, sounds like it. You told me before you kind of diagnosed yourself before anybody else figured it out. What kind of resources were you looking at there?
On YouTube Shorts, I found a video about a creator with type 1 diabetes talking about their diagnosis story. And they had mentioned having they were drinking so much water too, and their mother thought that they were trying to lose weight by drinking so much water and forbade them from drinking water. And they would have to sneak water into their bedroom at night because they were so thirsty. And they were actually very close to going into a diabetic ketoacidosis induced coma. And I very much related that to, you know, me having to drink so much water. I'm like, that is kind of similar there. That kind of inspired a deeper dive into some more resources with more organizations like Beyond Type 1 is a very big organization with type 1 diabetes. The Barbara Davis Center, which is where I currently go for my endocrinologist appointments. And there were several resources online that provided information about the symptoms and signs of type 1 diabetes that I all found very relatable and kind of answered a lot of questions about why things had been happening to me.
How did you bring that up? How did you bring it to someone's attention?
I first mentioned it to my parents, and it was kind of just laughed off a little bit, which is completely understandable. You know, that's a crazy thing to just come up and say is, hey, I think I have type 1 diabetes. But, you know, it was, like I said, like we didn't know anyone in the family who had had it. So it was kind of like a very out of the blue type thing to even be considering. So, you know, it was kind of just pushed off to the side a little bit for a while. That was around March of 2020 when I had brought that up. And so over the summer, you know, stuff just kept happening where it was like, maybe we need to revisit this a little bit. And then in October was ultimately when I went to my primary care provider and they did tests, drew my blood, and it was like, hey, your blood sugar is 505. You have type 1 diabetes and you need to go to the hospital as soon as you can. And then later that night, that was a Friday night. And so we were trying to wait until Monday to go into the hospital. But later that night, actually very, very early Saturday morning, I fell very, very ill. I got very nauseous, was not responding at all, had trouble with coordination. And so we ended up going into the ER that night.
Wow. Were you in DKA?
I was very, very much in DKA.
So you didn't have to go back to your primary care person a bunch of times. They kind of took it seriously from the jump.
Correct. Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. It felt very nice to be taken seriously there.
What was that first stay in the hospital like?
Extremely overwhelming because they had to run tests and stuff like that. And I had to wait to eat for a while in the hospital too because they hadn't given me insulin yet, which was very confusing as to why I couldn't eat, even though I was very hungry at that point.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
It was the first meal that I got. I actually started eating immediately because I didn't understand what they were talking about. They're like, no, please wait. We got to give you your insulin. So that was, you know, a very harsh awakening, rude awakening to the life of, you know, taking insulin with every meal I have.
How long were you in the hospital that first time?
Let's see. I believe I was in there for 2 nights. I was admitted early Saturday morning, and I believe I got released early Monday morning.
Have you been back since then?
I have not been in the hospital since then, thankfully.
Nice. Strong work.
Thank you.
Do you see an endocrinologist now, or is your primary care person still managing it?
I'm seeing an endocrinologist now. Yeah, I go to the Barbara Davis Center with the CU Anschutz Medical Center campus. I have appointments every 3 months just for, you know, checkups, check my A1C, make sure everything is going okay. And then about once every year, and it tends to happen around the summertime, but it'll be like a more intensive visit, you know, with more labs being drawn just to make sure my thyroid is still doing good and stuff like that.
Good deal. It sounds like you're in good hands there.
Yes, I love my doctors there. They're an incredible staff.
Wonderful. How'd you feel about all that? How'd you handle all that emotionally, getting sick and going to the hospital and being diagnosed and all that?
It was a very rough journey at first. My first night home from the hospital, I remember being so scared to fall asleep because I thought I was going to die in my sleep. I just could not get comfortable, and it was so much pressure. It was very overwhelming that, like, this is lifelong. There's a chance that no cure is found during my lifetime. And that is scary. So it was hard to deal with at first. Very, very hard. And there are definitely still days even now where it kind of, you know, just hits a certain way one day. And it's very, you know, it is an emotional day trying to manage with it. But definitely as time has gone on, I've gotten more used to it. It's a lot easier to accept now. You know, it's become a part of my day-to-day routine. It's not so intimidating now. I've got used to it. So the time has definitely helped a little bit.
Can you talk about what you're doing currently as far as insulin management? Like, what's your current system that you're using?
I currently use the Dexcom G6 glucose monitor and the Tandem T-Slim X2 insulin pump. I have the glucose monitoring me, you know, 24/7. I can always see my glucose numbers, which I really enjoy. I love having that kind of control over everything, you know, being able to see it at all times. I can totally understand the ignorance being bliss sometimes for some people with it, but I'm definitely like a perfectionist type person. I love being able to see it at all times and being to change something when I need to. And then with my Tandem t-slim pump, it has a feature called Control IQ where it can sync with my glucose monitor, and it will actually act as an artificial pancreas where it can adjust the amount of basal insulin going into my body at any time to try and help correct me and, you know, bring me down if I'm going high, or try to ease off the amount of insulin I'm getting if I'm going low.
Nice. That sounds ideal.
I very much enjoy it. It's really nice to have that help in a sense.
Yeah, I'm sure. How long did you have to do just regular insulin injections before you got on the closed loop system?
My memory gets a little fuzzy with these dates. there was a lot going on at the time, but I believe that for the first 3 months, it was just finger pricks and just insulin injections manually. No glucose monitor and no insulin pump. And I think at that 3 month mark, I started using a glucose monitor. And then at either the 6 month or 1 year mark was when I actually got an insulin pump. I think it was the 6 month mark though.
Have you had any issues with the pump failing or the system not working right and having to fall back on manual administration?
Thankfully, I have not had any issues with necessarily needing to fall back on manual injections yet. But I definitely have had some quirks happen with my insulin pump. I found that sometimes it can calculate the insulin on board incorrectly. So sometimes it may think I have an inaccurate amount of insulin still working in my body than I actually do, which isn't too much of a hurdle to jump over. You know, like I mentioned, I'm a perfectionist with all this stuff. So I tend to be pretty aware of all of that and be considerate of how much might still be active in my body. But it has been a very interesting process with, you know, getting it all working. Sometimes I have with the infusion sets, I've had it go wrong a lot with the cannula getting kinked once it's inside my body. And that's been frustrating, where it can kind of waste quite a bit of insulin sometimes, which is not cheap. very expensive, you know, mistakes or errors happening there, which can be a little frustrating.
Can you talk about cost? Has that been an issue for you?
I am very thankful that it has not been an issue for us. Our insurance has been able to cover most of everything, and we've been able to afford everything. And I'm very, very grateful for that. But I do know that that is not the case for a lot of people, especially in the United States. Again, on YouTube Shorts, I saw a video where someone living close to the Canadian border would actually go to Canada to buy insulin because an entire year of insulin cost in Canada was 1 month supply in the United States. And it is just outrageous how expensive it is here. So I'm very, very grateful that we are able to afford everything I need to stay healthy.
It's unfortunate. The whole, that's a whole other episode, I guess. The whole cost, the whole system is just, what word did you use? Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. The whole thing is outrageous. I'm glad it hasn't been an issue for you, but yeah, it sucks that it is an issue for so many other people.
Mm-hmm.
With the pump, how big of an impediment does that present to you on a day-to-day basis as far as just walking around or sports? I know you play a lot of sports, or traveling. Like, how does that factor into all those things?
Yeah, that has been a constant learning experience. Every single week, almost, it's like, oh wow, that is now impacting me in a new way I did not realize. With sports, it's a pretty big, you know, I got to plan a lot with having an insulin pump with sports. It's tough eating anything within 3 hours of going and doing sports because the insulin on board could potentially be dangerous if I'm active. You know, my bloodstream may absorb the insulin quicker than normal and cause issues with my blood sugar dropping really quickly. Also with high impact sports that I tend to play, like volleyball or softball, where, you know, I'm diving around the court or, you know, diving into a base or anything like that, it can be very dangerous for the pump to be on my body. That could cause injury. I could damage the pump. It's kind of best for me just to leave the pump at home if I'm ever going to do sports, which is also kind of frustrating because I can only silence it for an hour at a time, which means it's going to start beeping at an hour and I can really do much to, you know, stop that. And, you know, that might annoy my roommates. That is going to drain battery on the pump. It's definitely not optimal for sure.
Yeah.
And then traveling was an experience. This October, we flew for a cousin's wedding, and that was an experience. That was my first time at the airport as a diabetic. And I was kind of freaking out a little bit with having to, you know, like, oh, can I go through a metal detector or not? Will that hurt my insulin pump? What is actually safe for my devices to actually go through? And it was hectic. I think I stressed the TSA agent out a little bit with going through all that, but it all went fine.
What was the answer? Does it set off metal detectors or can you go through it with it on and it's no problem?
I went through with it on and I was in the one. It wasn't like the metal detector where you just walk through. It was the one where you kind of have your arms up and it'll kind of like rotate around you. And it did flag my insulin pump and my CGM on there, but I just had to show them they were on my body and I was holding my insulin pump in my hands so that they could see it. And then once I went through that, they had to do like a bomb swap on my hands to make sure there was no explosive powder or anything on my insulin pump that transferred to my hands.
Wow.
Yeah. It was interesting. I was not expecting them to be, well, of course it makes sense that they're that thorough, but it was weird, you know, having to get swabs for having explosive powder on my hands.
I'm sure. Yeah. There's a lot of considerations there that I would never have even thought about really.
Yeah, me too. I do, whenever I travel, ensure that I have some insulin pens on me in case my pump does malfunction. That way, you know, I still have some way of getting insulin when I'm away, because obviously we don't want to be trying to replace a pump when we are not at our normal residence.
For sure. Any other kind of day-to-day things that you've been surprised about?
Something that has been very interesting is how quickly cardio can actually impact my blood sugar sometimes. Even if I don't have any insulin on board at all, walking like to and from classes, for instance, can be kind of dangerous for my blood sugar sometimes. I've had several instances on campus where I've just been walking to class and I've actually had an extremely bad urgent low just from walking, which have been kind of scary because, you know, you don't know around who around you may or may not be aware of what you need for help if you should need it. Thankfully, I was always in a place where I was able to get it turned around quickly enough before I really needed to start bringing in other people to help me. But it got very close sometimes, which was not ideal and very scary.
Yeah, I bet. Do you have you have one of the med alert tags?
Yes, I do. I have a bracelet that says that I'm a type 1 diabetic that I will wear around a lot just in case.
How long did it take you to get comfortable? Like how long, or do you still feel less comfortable with it as far as just accepting it, like you were saying earlier?
You know, it definitely took a very long time for me to start like feeling normal with this, especially early on when I didn't have a glucose monitor. We would have to be getting up at 3 a.m. every single night to check my blood sugar with a finger poke to make sure that I was doing okay. And that was so unbelievably rough, especially during the school year when it was, you know, a nightly occurrence, but I was still having to get up earlier than what I would have liked, you know, during that. So that was really tough. That made it really hard to deal with for the first good while that I had diabetes. And it's just constantly changing. You know, our body is always kind of changing the amount of insulin we need. Physical activity has a huge impact. I noticed that when I'm on campus and walking a lot, I need a lot less insulin. And then when I go home for break, suddenly my basal rates have to be almost doubled. The exercise really helps with like managing blood sugar. So when I'm not getting it as much, I need my insulin pump and additional insulin to really help cover that difference, which can be frustrating to navigate sometimes when that is in the process of changing.
How long did it take you to get used to counting carbs and all that?
That also took a while. At the beginning, I was extremely meticulous, just double, triple checking all of the, you know, labels. I refused to eat anything like homemade because I was so paranoid that like we're having to calculate the carbs of everything that gets put in, which can be pretty difficult. And then dividing it by the serving size and the portion and all that, which is just another entire layer of confusion.
Yeah.
So early on, I ate a lot of stuff that was prepackaged, which who knows how healthy that was for me. But I've definitely gotten better. I've gotten to the point where I can kind of just see something and then be able to guess, like within a reasonable range, how many carbs that might be, which is something that blew my mind earlier on. I was like, how can you just look at something and know how many carbs that might be? But now, you know, I've gotten that a little bit more under my belt with knowing what kind of food groups tend to be higher, you know, what can be considered average and what a good average bolus is and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was always impressed when I worked in PICU with the diabetic kids who could just do it, you know, we were supposed to be doing it as nurses, right? We're supposed to, you know, we were supposed to be managing while they were in the hospital, but they were way better at it. And you know, it should have been easy for us. Like the hospital like tells you how many carbs is in everything, but it used to stress me out bad. But the kids who already knew how to do it, it was just like, they just did it. That always impressed me a lot. You were 17 when you're diagnosed. Were there any like teenage issues that you ran into? It seemed like the teenagers were kind of the ones who would ignore it and end up, you know, in trouble. I could speculate about the reasons for that, I guess. But did you ever experience any like teen angst or any kind of social issues or anything like that that kept you from getting on the bus and doing what you're supposed to do?
For me, I didn't ever experience anything like that. Any, you know, kind of frustration with it and just kind of taking my hands away entirely. The fact that it was lifelong and knowing, you know, there are various complications that can result from going high too often, that scared me a lot and definitely gave me the motivation to stay on top of it pretty intensely, especially for those first couple months. My A1C was higher than 14 when I first went into the hospital. It went higher than they were able to read. And then 3 months later, at my first like routine checkup, I'd gotten it down to like a 7.4, I believe.
Nice.
And then my next meeting, it was actually a 5.9.
Boom.
For me, it's like, it's never not on my mind. It's literally always something I have to be thinking about. It's like, oh, what am I going to be doing in the next 3 hours that could maybe mean that insulin is a dangerous idea? You know, if I'm trying to go to bed, it's like, oh, what's my blood sugar at? Am I going to be able to get good sleep? You know, if I'm too high, is it going to mean I don't get enough rest? If I'm too low, am I going to get waken up in the middle of the night? You know, walking to classes, like I already mentioned, that's kind of a big process, you know, trying to ensure that I'm okay. And then being worried about my insulin, about my glucose monitor, you know, beeping during class and being disruptive. There's been several instances where that's happened and it's been kind of embarrassing. It's just, it's so much to think about, you know, because you're basically replacing an organ in your body, which is so much work. And it's just a lot to think about all the time. When I was talking with my dad a lot, you know, even still now, but especially when I was first diagnosed, it's like, we had no idea that all of this came with diabetes. Like, it's just, there's so many stereotypes about it in like media and in society that kind of minimize what it's about. You know, it's like, oh, just don't eat sugar. But it's so much more than that. And also that in itself is incorrect. You know, we can have sugar and still be fine as type 1 diabetics. But you know, it's a lot that people just don't know about.
You mentioned stereotypes. Anything else that you've picked up on that that is either correct or incorrect that people seem to have preconceived notions about?
Yeah, something that I've picked up on or experienced a lot is especially in like online gaming. My username online is kind of a play on diabetes, and it kind of, you know, might imply that I have diabetes in some sort. And I get, you know, people online can kind of infer maybe that I have diabetes from that, or they'll ask. And then the amount of times that they then subsequently say like, oh, you must be fat, or like you must be overweight, or like they make assumptions like that. It's hard to deal with. I would debate whether or not to confront them about it, you know, because like it's such an unserious environment. You know, it's a video game, you know, lecturing them about that or, you know, like correcting them a little bit. It's not the place for that. But at the same time, you know, it'd be helpful if they could, you know, correct that misconception and stop kind of looking down on people with diabetes like that.
Any other context where you have faced any sort of stigma, discrimination, anything like that?
Not really. People in person will not say it as much as online, you know, because obviously with the whole online thing, people, you don't know who they are. But people in person have tended to be a lot more considerate and conscious, which I really appreciate. Colorado State has a program with students with disabilities where you can request accommodations for all your classes. And I have stuff that I will do with diabetes. Like for instance, additional excused absences, you know, if my blood sugar is being rough that day, I can have food or drink with me in testing rooms in case my blood sugar goes low, stuff like that. And I found that most of my professors have been really, really good with that. And we haven't really had any issues, which I very much appreciated.
Any other students in your cohort or anybody else you've run into that also is diabetic?
Yeah, I definitely see it. You know, obviously having the glucose monitor, it's so much easier to pick out now. You know, I'll see it. I'm like, oh my gosh, hey, I have that too. My freshman year, when I was in astronomy, I was taking an exam and I looked up and a person sitting like 2 rows in front of me had a glucose monitor on the back of their arm. And I didn't say anything, you know, because the exam was about to start. But like after the class or after the exam, I'd kind of gone out and found them. And I was like, hey, like I have diabetes too. Like I have a CGM too. And I was just like, hey, like if you ever like have issues with accommodations or anything, like if the TAs or the professors ever giving you a hard time, I got you. Like I know what you're dealing with. I got you. So yeah, it was kind of, it's really nice just seeing other people with it and knowing like, okay, like they know what I'm going through and they know what I'm kind of dealing with. And that it always makes me smile when I see someone with an insulin pump or glucose monitor on.
Yeah, very good. I'm sure that person appreciated that.
I hope so.
Are you still in touch? Did you become friends? Is that like the start of a beautiful story?
I wish. I think we were both a little nervous, you know, more of the introvert type person. So, you know, we kind of just like got each other's names and phone numbers in case something ever happened. But, you know, we haven't really talked much since then.
Got you. Is your pump pretty visible when you're just walking around? Or do you make a conscious effort to hide it or anything? Or how do you feel about that?
I don't make a conscious effort to hide it at all. I know some people can be very scared to show it, you know, might be embarrassed about it. But I actually very much welcome questions about it and people talking about it. It's kind of therapeutic in a way for me to talk about it. It kind of like reassures me, like I know what I'm doing, you know, kind of gives me the confidence. And, you know, I've been doing what I'm doing for a long time. I'm managing it well. And the fact that I'm able to explain it to someone else shows that I know what I'm talking about. So I enjoy talking about it with other people. I tend to just keep it in my pocket. The tubing is what tends to be more noticeable than like the actual pump itself. But yeah, it's pretty discreet, I would say, but definitely could be more discreet if I wanted it to be.
What advice would you give to anybody who is has just been diagnosed or is just starting off on this path?
I think a big thing is just being patient with yourself. This is something I definitely still struggle with. I am very easily frustrated and impatient with my blood sugar. And that can often lead to me making decisions that are like rash and can be very detrimental sometimes. So I would say just be patient. It's so much to learn. It's so much to learn and get used to and learn how to incorporate it on the daily. So just be patient with yourself and know that it's going to take time and you're going to mess up. And that is completely okay. There are so many people online and I'm sure in person too that people can reach out to hopefully and, you know, ask questions and just learn about from other people who have been dealing with this as well. But yeah, it's a lot. It's so much to learn and it is going to take a lot of time to get used to it. So just being able to give yourself grace and be able to take it small steps at a time, I think are really important to keeping yourself happy and healthy.
Awesome. You mentioned making rash decisions. Can you give a more specific example about that?
For sure. I tend to overreact when I see that I'm about to have a spike in my blood sugar. So I'll give myself a bolus to, you know, kind of bring it down a little bit, try to flatten it before it really gets too high. And that can be a bit aggressive sometimes. I've had quite a few times where I've ended up going low afterwards because it was too aggressive of a bolus. So it's just being overcautious and trying to do too much when I think I might be going high.
Do your parents still monitor your glucose also?
They do, yeah. I share my glucose numbers with both of my parents.
Your dad was telling me that he gets real-time alerts, you know, if your sugar's out of whack. That's still a thing?
It is, yes. You know, I really appreciate them always kind of checking in on me, you know, if my blood sugar's ever low or high and just, you know, seeing where I'm at. I always really much appreciate that. It's nice now having the freedom, though, when they're kind of doing that less. Of course, I know what's best for my body. I know when dangerous lows are kind of approaching more than if it's just going to be like a mediocre low that won't be too dangerous. It's nice, you know, just being able to do that now and not having to like check in every single time, you know, something, my blood sugar is low or something like that. So I very much appreciated their help and concern a lot. But I'm also really appreciating, you know, the freedom that I have now more of, you know, being able to just do it on my own a bit more.
Yeah, that's an element that people in the not so recent past would never have had to deal with. I'm sure it's cool for the parents, but I would imagine there are times when you're like, leave me alone, I got it.
Yeah, there have been times when it's kind of like, it's a very mild low, or like I've been like just below low at like, for instance, 67 or 68 for a long time. And it's like, I know I'm fine, like I'm feeling completely fine, don't really feel low. Especially in the mornings when it's like, I really kind of don't want to get out of bed or it's like late at night where it's like I'm kind of getting tired and just want to sleep, and I know I'll be fine. It's nice, you know, kind of just to do that and know that they aren't going to like be too worried and try to like check in, because then there's pressure on my end to kind of, you know, get it up so that they're less worried.
Oh, interesting. Correct your sugar for them and not you.
Yeah, just make them feel more reassured.
Wow.
It's kind of nice now to just kind of deal with it where I'm at, whether or not I'm, you know, at a low point or not.
Has that ever been super helpful? Has a text message from them ever, or what, or a phone call or whatever ever alerted you to something you weren't aware of, or no?
There have been times. I wouldn't say like it necessarily alerted me to something, but something that came to mind was, especially when the sensor is new, it can be very sensitive to compression lows. So like if I'm putting pressure on it, the interstitial fluid that it resides in inside my body gets, you know, compressed, and the sugar levels decrease in there because of the compression. So my glucose monitor may think that I'm actually having a really bad low if I'm laying on my side with that my glucose monitor is on, for instance. And freshman year of college, I had a compression low in the middle of the night, and it was saying that I was pretty low. It was a very, very urgent low. I was lower than the 50s is what it was saying. In reality, I was fine. But of course, that is going to be very concerning for my parents. And so they called to wake me up and try to see if I was doing okay. And I did not wake up to the phone call. I slept through it. So in their mind, I'm not answering the phone call. My blood's
dead. In their mind, you were dead.
Is extremely low. So they were very reasonably freaking out. And police ended up getting called.
Whoa.
And so it was an experience, you know, because I was in the dorms at that time. So, you know, I was reassuring my neighbors, like, sorry, everything's fine. You know, my roommate got woken up. It was an ordeal, but, you know, it was definitely a learning experience. I need to have my phone on higher volume now in case that happens. And of course, I'm very grateful for my parents calling. You know, obviously, I can't even imagine how scary that was. So I'm glad that they took action in that scenario. But it was a night.
Wow. So literally police officers banging on your door in the middle of the night, waking you up.
Yep. 3 a.m.
What? What did you think was happening?
I was freaking out because they're like banging on my door. They're like, Joshua Palmer, are you in there? And I'm just like, yeah, why are you here? It was quite the adrenaline rush.
Yeah, definitely not something you would hear about in a diabetes education class, I would imagine.
Yeah.
How much of this stuff were you prepared for by educators or healthcare people versus how much did you just have to figure out on your own?
I would say a vast majority I was prepared for and, you know, taught by educators. The first day that I got out of the hospital on Monday, it was actually like a 5 or 6 hour training session that I went to for learning about diabetes, you know, how insulin worked, the different types of insulin. I was on insulin pens at that time. So, you know, like with the different pens, how much insulin to give, ratios for carbohydrates, long acting insulin, stuff like that. It was a very, very thorough training that I went through. It was several days that first week that I had. I was talking with like a dietitian as well to learn how to count carbs and like ideal carb amounts per meal, if that makes sense. Because another thing is diabetics actually do need to eat a certain amount of carbs every day, which I was not aware of at all. Otherwise, they could also potentially go into DKA because their body's not getting the carbohydrates that they need for energy, so it starts burning fat. So it was very interesting to learn from me about that, where there's kind of like a range with a maximum and a minimum that might be good for falling into with total carbohydrates per day, in a sense. But yeah, there was also training sessions a week after, you know, just kind of as a follow-up after we've had a week with kind of doing it semi on our own, follow up and asking about questions. And then there was a training session for the glucose monitor. Once that became a thing, there was a training session for the pump. Once that became a thing, there were several meetings about deciding which pump would be ideal for me, you know, which one I actually wanted to use. There was a lot of meetings and communication that happened with my providers and educators at the Barbara Davis Center that was very overwhelming at the time. That was a lot to go through. And especially with travel, you know, it's not the closest to us. So that was kind of a commitment of driving there that often. But the information that they gave me was absolutely priceless. It was so invaluable, the amount of help that they gave me. And that gave me like a really good foundation for learning how to adjust it on my own now. You know, like I'm able to adjust my own basal rates now. I'm able to identify, you know, what time period I need to kind of adjust my ratios for. I've learned how to incorporate sports a little bit more. So yeah, I would say that they provided me with a lot of good foundation to, you know, kind of then take the lessons I need to learn on my own and do well with that on my own.
That's so good to hear. That's a very cool resource.
Very cool.
I'll definitely put a link to that, to their program in the show notes. Do they have a lot of stuff just available online?
They do. They have a website. I do know that they take donations for medical supplies, like infusion sets and insulin cartridges that they will give out to people who need. So that's also a resource if you are in kind of the Colorado area in the United States. They will also take in people from surrounding states, I'm pretty sure, if they're willing to drive in. But yeah, they have a lot of really great resources and a lot of really great people who are willing to help.
That's cool. I'm glad you've had such a good experience with that. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
I think that's one thing that I definitely struggle with in my practice because we don't have a lot of resources around for diabetic education. So that makes me feel like I need to be doing a lot more. Anything else that came to mind? Anything else that that you would like to share or think it's important for folks to know? What didn't I ask you about that I should have asked you?
I think we did touch on this a little bit. But like just validating and acknowledging the emotional roller coaster that happens like when you're first diagnosed. I remember when I was dismissed from the hospital, I literally did not want to leave the hospital, which can seem kind of bizarre, you know, because the hospital is not a fun place. But it was so scary and overwhelming to be having to do this on my own now. Because like in the hospital, the nurses were doing my insulin, you know, they were calculating all of that for me. And now I have to learn how to do that, which is, it was so foreign to me. Like, even after that first session, I was just like, I didn't even want to eat. I didn't want to eat because I was so scared of messing something up or like giving myself too much insulin. And then that's particularly dangerous when I don't have a glucose monitor to know. And, you know, I'm kind of relying on intermittent finger pokes or, you know, symptoms of going low. And it was very, very scary. I think it's important to like recognize that and validate that for newly diagnosed type 1 diabetics. You know, it's tough. It really is tough and scary and overwhelming. And that's completely okay because it's an entirely new way of life that you're having to learn very, very quickly with a lot of importance. So I just hope that, you know, if I ever knew someone who's going through that, I could be able to provide them the support and, you know, answer questions that they might have during that extremely overwhelming and terrifying time.
I think you should be a diabetes educator.
I think that could be a lot of fun, potentially, getting to teach people about the ins and outs of diabetes and being able to reassure them, you know, that it will be okay.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's your ticket to social media fame or YouTube fame. And you'd be an amazing resource for that. I'm serious, man. Start a YouTube channel with, I mean, you'll be a diabetes celebrity.
That's also been really helpful, actually, is me and my father have watched so many YouTube channels about diabetes. You know, learning to like travel with diabetes was a huge, that was a lot of videos I watched. I am not positive this is their YouTube channel name, but I'm pretty sure their channel is called She's Diabetic. They are a type 1 diabetic living in the United Kingdom. And I've really enjoyed their videos in particular in just kind of dealing with it a little bit. They're such an upbeat personality, and it kind of makes like dealing with diabetes fun in a way. Just like seeing someone being so like happy and, you know, being able to like express that emotion while dealing with things about diabetes. So like they've been particularly helpful for me. I really enjoy their content.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Well, that was a fantastic conversation. Is there anything else you wanted to throw out there?
I guess I'll just throw some love to my fellow diabetics. You know, I see what you're doing. You're doing amazing. Keep doing it because it'll get easier and it'll get better. So, you know, I appreciate all the effort you're putting in and you're doing a great job.
If anyone listening happens to want to contact you with any questions or anything, would you be open to that?
Absolutely. I would be.
Yeah. How can people find you?
Yeah, you can contact me at my email at Palmer, PalmerJG59@gmail.com.
Joshua Palmer, thank you so much for your time, man. I've enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me on.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you again to my guest, Joshua Palmer. Man, what a great conversation. I know I'm biased, but isn't he a prince? So proud of him. In the show notes, you'll find links to all the organizations and the YouTube channel that he mentioned. Again, if you'd like to contact him directly with any questions about managing type 1 diabetes, The email address is palmerjg59@gmail.com. And if you'd like to contact me, the email is thekppod, that's thekppod, @gmail.com. So literally police officers banging on your door in the middle of the night, waking you up.
Yep. 3 a.m.
What? What did you think was happening? Throwing the weed, flushing the weed down the toilet. Oh, you're in Colorado. Never mind. All right. That does it for this episode of Knowledgeable Provider. I'm your host, Jody Marks. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like or subscribe or follow and leave a nice 5-star review. And as always, stay safe, take care of yourself, and take care of your patients, in that order. The book.